This is the McDonald's Viking Bell Ball Podcast, presented by McDonald's of Jackson, Wellston, Oak Hill, and now proudly in MacArthur. McDonald's and Viking basketball. I'm loving it. The Viking Bell Ball Podcast with head coach Matt Coles is your weekly look inside Benton County Vikings basketball. Stand by for recaps and previews of all of this week's Viking action, plus scores, stats, guest interviews, and more. Now broadcasting across the worldwide web
from a padded room in his basement.
Alongside the head coach of the Vikings, Matt Coles, here's your host, Carl Knox.
And welcome once again to another edition of the Viking Round Ball Podcast. Episode 57, if you're keeping score. Tape date, Wednesday, January the 27th. Alongside the head coach of the Vinton County Vikings, Matt Coles. My name's Carl Knox. The podcast presented by McDonald's. McDonald's of MacArthur, Jackson, Oak Hill, and Wellston. Whether it's before or after the game, McDonald's and high school sports, they go hand in hand. McDonald's. I'm loving it. I'm loving a lot of things like McDonald's, but as we tape on the sunny, cold winter afternoon, I think I speak for not only myself, but Coach Coles, I would be remiss to say that I'm loving everything right now, because nothing as a Viking fan is to love about a Viking defeat. Can you believe I just pulled that out of my butt on the first take?
Yeah, that was professional. Very well done.
I got the coach to laugh. We're done. Cut the tape. Let's get out of here. It's good to take. Hey. Well, you're smiling. I know. And I know you have all the respect in the world for Coach Skinner and the Bulldogs, and we'll dissect that game here in a few seconds. We do have talk about Megs, but we have a really good guest. That's a good piece of news. This officiating segment that we started, like, I think, what, three episodes ago, something right. Like that. We're going to kind of wind up today with a guy who's it's a little off the beaten path in terms of the topic of high school sports. A guy I've gotten to know over the past year, who's been officiating for a long, long time. We'll get into that. He has been a NBA referee for 22 years. I think done over 1,500 NBA games, like 150 playoffs. He's done scads of playoff final games, and then he got out of that and decided he wanted more time with his family. So now he's just doing NCAA Division I games. I think he mainly works in the SEC and the Big 12 conferences. Joe DeRosa, who coincidentally has done the past two NCAA championship games. So this guy is well-seasoned. He's probably done it all, seen it all. We're going to get his take here in a few minutes about what it's like to be a big-time official, and also his roots and how he got into the business, and talk about things like that. But first, we need to talk about local stuff, like local Viking basketball. As first of all, you guys took care of business, a game that concerned you against a very formidable opponent and the Megs Marauders, as they came into the game against you guys, I think 12-1. And you guys took care of business with them back on the 19th of January. Final score with that game was you 73, the Marauders 54. Briefly talk about that game. I know it's been a long time ago, but your thoughts on that game? I know pretty much had to be pleased with it.
Yeah, we played really well that night. Both ends of the floor, really. I thought we guarded them well. Forced some tough shots, made them take some tough shots. Then I thought when they got out of rhythm a little bit, so when they got the open shot, we still were lucky enough they missed. And then offensively, we did a nice job against their zone. They play like a unique style of defense, one you don't see very often. And I thought we handled that pretty well. Our spacing was good, and the way we attacked gaps and things like that. We did a nice job. Had, I think, five guys in double figures that night maybe, so that shows you we were moving the ball around pretty well. And So real pleased last week with that. And, unfortunately, we had the weather there, so we had to go a whole week and not play, and obviously didn't look as good last night.
Yeah, and that leads us right into the big game, and the game that's fresh in everybody's mind. If you're a Bulldog fan, you're elated. If you're a Viking fan, you're probably not in the best of moods today, as last night here at Vinton County High School, you guys lose a real tough one to the Athens Bulldogs. Final score 79-75 in overtime. A game that had every twist and turn and every element of emotion that you could, you know, if you were just a spectator, not a fan, just someone who just rolled into town to catch a high school basketball game and didn't have any allegiance or liking of any team, I think you would have walked away from that game going, wow, that was a barn burner. That was right. Well worth the ticket into the gym. But unfortunately, as a Viking coach and fan, and that we all are, that one stung a little bit. And I'm sure I just knowing you and knowing how competitive and driven you are, it stings. But I know that your adage has always been, we got to move on. You know, it's yesterday's news. But let's just real quickly, you know, the game itself. First of all, when Athens comes in on your home court and they just shoot lights out in the first quarter, they jump out to a 20-6 lead. I'm sure that you and the coaching staff and that break between the first and second quarter, what was the dialogue like? Was it changing up defenses? I know they had some guys scoring that were not, you know, Lutz was getting his, but they had some guys that normally didn't average the points that they're getting looks and they were knocking down threes, and it just wasn't the start I'm sure you wanted.
No, not at all. And I think it was the only game this year I can truly say where I felt like we were flat. We just didn't have the emotion that you would expect us to have on our home floor in a big game. And I don't know. I you know, we're going to talk about it today and try to get to the bottom as to why that was. But like you said, they came out hitting shots. Some guys that maybe normally don't produce a lot for them were. We just couldn't defensively guard Lutz and everybody else, it seemed like. That was really the trick. When Lutz didn't score, he usually got an assist.
Right.
I don't know how many assists he had, but it's probably a pretty good number. We got ourselves behind the eight ball. Then to top it off, then we have a bad offensive quarter for us, by far our worst offensive quarter of the year, where we only are able to muster up, you know, 6 points or whatever. That's not like us. I don't know. It might not have been – was it six at the end of the quarter? I can't remember. We had a bad offensive quarter, and then
– I'm sorry. No, it's 22-10.
Yeah, I'm sorry. We got it to 10. But the second quarter, we were able to settle in defensively a little bit. You know, tried a couple different things that worked at least temporarily. We were able to get some points on the board. And really, at halftime, obviously we weren't real happy, but I was pleased with the fact that we'd gotten ourselves back into it. It was a 1-point game at halftime. Mm-hmm. We felt like, you know, if we could come out in the third quarter, maybe establish ourselves. And we just weren't able to really ever put together a run to build, you know, a 6-8 point lead even. You know, I know there were a ton of lead changes in the third and fourth quarter, and had some chances to win the game. I mean, we had the ball up one with 30 seconds left and had kind of a, you know, an unforced turnover. And then we were able to find a way to get it to overtime. There we scored with a couple seconds left, and of course then the Lutz kid went down with that injury, and you got to give Athens credit that some of their other guys stepped up,
especially Saltzman
in overtime, scored the first 5 points, got us down again behind the eight ball. Again we battled back, and again it looked like we had a chance to win the game there, and had kind of an unfortunate ending with a bang bang play down under the bucket, and the next thing you know, they're shooting free throws, and we just we couldn't get that last shot when we were down two. We tried to push it in transition, and we didn't want to let them set their defense. I think they were out of timeouts, if I remember correctly. We just wanted to go see if we could catch them, a little bit out of. That's what we did at the end of regulation. We just went We caught them out of position and just basically drove all the way and shot a layup to tie the game. And we thought maybe we could get more of the same. And unfortunately, we weren't able to get the shot off. It's a tough pill to swallow. It's been a long night, long day. I'm looking forward to practice just to get past it, you know, and start working on some things. And hopefully we'll be able to do that.
And when you look back on the game, you know, there's talk, different things, and I'm not going there in terms of people's opinions on good officiating, bad officiating. I'm of the belief that we had our opportunities.
Yeah.
We did,
yeah.
and we didn't capitalize on them. You know, making excuses does nobody any good. But you know, back to the game in the third quarter, you know, Lutz was in some foul trouble, and Coach Skinner had to set him for a while. And I thought, okay, here's where we can make our run. Of course,
right.
Tristan spent a lot of the second quarter on the bench in foul trouble. He got in the third quarter and didn't pick up that, you know, that critical
right.
third foul that you had to really. So you had Tristan out on the floor. He had Lutz set, and I thought, okay, here's where we're going to make our run and get back to what we are. And it just seemed like we just kind of spun our wheels. I mean, we kept up with him, but we didn't extend a lead beyond maybe 5-6 points at any given time. And that's when, you know, and then, you know, you look at it from a perspective, not that, you know, when their best player goes down, and heaven forbid, no matter how much of a fan, you never want to see an opposing player get
right,
hurt.
Right.
And our thoughts and prayers are with Griffin and his health and things of that nature. But it was just one of those things that it just seemed like it was just a bad dream.
Yeah.
I mean, it was just like anything that, just when you thought everything was going to make okay, it didn't. So I'm sure as an Athens fan, you thought, we have no chance to win now. You know, we're on the road. They've tied it up. They're making the run, or so to speak. Then we lose our best player, and then it goes to overtime. And you're thinking, but lo and behold, anything that could go wrong for the Vikings last night, it just kind of did. And you know, I'm sure you're going to talk about that here shortly when you head over to practice.
Right.
But show goes on, I guess. I'm not going to ask your coaching secrets about how you're going to address the team or what goes on, but you know, right now as it stands, the Athens Bulldogs loss is yesterday's news.
Yeah, I mean, it has to be. You have to put wins and losses behind you pretty quick in high school basketball, because you just don't have a lot of time. And you know, we've got to get ready for a really good Miami Trace team, which we'll talk about here in a few, and then a real busy week after in the league. So yeah, I mean, we are going to spend the day dwelling on this a little bit in practice, because I think we need to learn from it. But then, you know, when hopefully we'll wash our hands of it a little bit afterwards, and starting tomorrow and Friday, really get ready for Miami Trace.
Without getting into it, I know by now I'm kind of notorious for asking some off the wall questions. I mean, we've been doing this for what, 10 years now, so we're used to each other. When you have these dwelling practices, for lack of a better word, and you get together, do you do it in the gym? Do you go in the locker room? You go find a classroom? You just sit down and just have a, you know, just sit down and just BS with each other? Just talk? It just, how do those things, how does the dynamic?
It just depends on the situation. I think, you know, we normally meet, we have a couple different rooms we meet in regularly anyway. Win or lose, we have a film, we have a room that we watch film in.
That, it's a classroom that
right,
you have
the
TV
it's got
in.
Like a projector, and we can watch film. And then, you know, we also have a room closer to the gym where we have a board. And we can just sort of spread out a little bit, a classroom down there close to the gym. Of course, we have our locker room, but sometimes we talk in the gym. It just depends, you know, and I think it just depends on what we're trying to do. Are we watching film, or am I just going over some stuff on the board? Sometimes you're going over stuff on the floor. You know, I know today we are going to walk through some things, some mistakes defensively, some rotations that broke down last night that gave them a lot of open shots. And so we're going to do some things like that. So it'll be a combination.
One last question, I'm done.
Okay.
Did you watch the film last night when you got home?
Watch the film.
You are kidding me.
No, not last night. It takes a little while to upload that, you know, the way we do it now on Huddle and stuff. So I was able today on my lunch and planned to watch the film today. You know, it's always tough to watch a film like that, but I wanted to see some things, and because you can't go into practice. When you watch a game live, for me at least, maybe some coaches are a lot smarter than me, but things get jumbled in your head. You know, you're trying to remember sequences. When did that happen? What was the time and score? And it's tough to, you know, sort that out sometimes in a game that's helter skelter like that was last night. So you watch the film to make sure before you go into practice, you know what you're talking about. So I had to do it today. Yeah.
Well, good luck as we move on. We'll be previewing the Miami Trace game here in the third segment. And for what it's worth, congratulations to Coach Skinner and the Bulldogs.
Yep.
It's a good win last night.
Yep.
And especially when you know, it showed a lot of poise on their behalf. And that's what makes the TVC so good. I'm glad, you know, it sucks to lose. But, you know, a couple years ago, everyone was bragging on how weak the TVC was in basketball.
Yeah,
I would beg to differ this year. It's a pretty darn strong conference.
It is.
There's a lot of good teams, and we've talked about all year long you were probably going to encounter this at some juncture. So.
Yeah, it's a 12-game process, you know, so we've got five of them left, and we'll see what happens.
Okay, well, coming up next, we'll talk to Joe DeRosa, an NCAA ref, a former NBA ref, and a guy with tons and tons, decades of experience refereeing not only in the big time of the NBA and the NCAA, but he also started out on a little league court, believe it or not. We'll get his story next as the Viking Ramble podcast rolls on. Back on the Viking Realm Ball podcast, presented by McDonald's, McDonald's and MacArthur, Jackson, Oak Hill, and Wellston. Whether it's before or after the game, McDonald's and high school sports, they go hand in hand. McDonald's, I'm loving it. Episode number 57 of the Viking Realm Ball podcast, alongside the head basketball coach of the Benton County Vikings, Matt Combs. I'm Carl Knox with our guest this week as we kind of wind down our series of officiating, and we bring in a pretty big name in as far as officiating, not just in Ohio, but nationwide and all around the globe. A guy who spent countless years, 22 as a matter of fact, in the NBA, and has also done NCAA finals, and is a very well-known name in the ranks of NBA and NCAA Division I referees, the one and only Joe DeRosa. Joe, how are you, sir?
I'm doing fine, Carl. Thanks for having me on the show.
Well, I appreciate you taking time out of your schedule. We've kind of been working on this for a couple weeks, but between the weather and you being all over the U.S., particularly southern and eastern parts of the United States, you're a hard guy to track down this time of year, aren't you?
Well, it's kind of busy right now. We're in the middle of our conference season, and I just have to go where they ask me to go. And we did get jammed up in Philadelphia last week with the big snowstorm. We had to get through that, and I'm glad we can do this today.
Now you're on the road today. You say you're in Oklahoma?
Yes, last night I worked at Oklahoma, and tonight I work at Oklahoma State.
Okay, wow. Now tell us a little bit about, I know you spent 22 years in the NBA, and back around 2010, as you told me this summer, you just got sick of being on the road, being away from the family, but you still enjoyed the officiating part. How did you get your start? I know you started in high school basketball officiating. What year was that?
Oh, gosh. I started officiating basketball in 1977. We're kind of giving away my age here. But while I was at John Carroll University, I was a junior there. That's when I started officiating, mainly because my dad wouldn't loan me any money, and I had to find a way to make ends meet. And from there, it kind of took off, and in 1985... had the first opportunity to work some Division I basketball, and in 1989 I was hired in the NBA.
And 22 years in the NBA, you did countless 22 seasons in the NBA, did over 1,500 regular season games, 150 NBA playoff games, 11 NBA final games, and then also you've conducting a lot of these officiating clinics abroad, in particularly Venezuela and France. Talk about the transition between, you know, once you were well established in the NBA, how big of a change was it to go from NBA back to NCAA after being out of the college business for 22 years? Was that tough to kind of reacclimate yourself with the rules?
Well, that's a really good question. That was the biggest adjustment, was adjusting to the different rules and how they're applied in college basketball compared to what I had done in the NBA for many years. And with the help of my coordinators and fellow officials, we were able to get through it, and took about a few months to get accustomed to it, but it worked out pretty well, and we just take it from there.
And Joe, I watch occasionally, get a chance to watch some college basketball, and I've actually just happened to turn on ESPN a couple times and see you work. I think you were you working Iowa State and Kansas the other night?
Right, on Monday night we had Iowa State and Kansas. It was a really good game.
Yeah.
Great environment. That's one of the really neat things about major college basketball in certain arenas.
Right.
They get great fan support, and they definitely want their team to win, and everything you do against their team, they let you know about it. But the game broke nice for us, and it worked out pretty well.
Yeah, I see you working some of those, like Oklahoma State, Oklahoma there a couple weeks ago. But I the question I had for you with the college game is, with these one and dones now, and everybody in college, even the best players being super young, typically at the major D1 level, the skill level of basketball, I think most people would agree, at the college ranks is probably a little less than what it was back when guys stayed 4 years and you had your Patrick Ewing, your Chris Mullins, these guys that stayed, you know. But obviously the athleticism is probably even better now as a whole. How tough does that make your job when better athletes but maybe less skilled a little bit, if that makes sense?
Well, the way I phrase it is you have a lot of really good athletes trying to play basketball, and many of those athletes that are trying to play basketball are not quite as good as they may think they are. So that makes it kind of difficult sometimes because they do things you don't really anticipate happening out there on the court, and you have to react to it quickly. But I would say also, you know, hopefully the trend may change a little bit. If you look at Oklahoma, I had them last night against Texas Tech. It's a veteran team. They stayed together. Their best player, Buddy Hield, is a senior and is doing very well. And their other players have been there for 3 or 4 years, and they have success. And hopefully situations like that may let some of these players see it might be better in their best interest to stick around for maybe another year or two and develop their skills.
Joe, one of the I hate to admit this, but we're going to bring his name up early. We'll really get into this a little bit later on. But a mutual, I use this term very loosely, friend of both of ours, Earl Thomas, had kind of introduced me to some of your old NBA buddies and still great friends of this date, Ron Gerritsen, Billy Kennedy, Pat Freer, John Goble, some of those guys that are still working in the league. And just to be around those guys off the court, spending time with them before or after a game, I realized as much as you think the common person thinks, wow, you're an NBA ref or an NCAA ref, that's got to be a really great lifestyle. And then you get to know guys like you and those guys I just mentioned. It seems that you guys lead a very, for lack of a better word, and I don't say lonely, but you're on your own a lot. You have a lot of downtime. And obviously, I would hate to guess the amount of miles you've spent in an airplane over the course of your life. How is that part of the job taxing on you? And what do you guys do when you're not working? I mean, you spend a lot of time by yourself, don't you?
Well, all those things are true. And it's one of the reasons why I was just, I don't want to say I was tired of it, but I knew it was time for me to at least enjoy life a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And I've had the chance to work here in college basketball. Season's a lot shorter, and I can work when I really want to and not work when I choose not to.
Sure.
But being on the road for 8 months, there are a lot of lonely days, and you miss everything that goes on with your family. And I'm sure all those guys that you mentioned have shared experiences with you also. But at the same time, the job's very demanding, so you need to get your rest. You need to do your work. Every game before an NBA game, the crew has a morning meeting together, preparing for that night. And there's a lot of work involved along with the dead time. So it's something that you get used to, and sometimes you really don't like it.
Yeah, I know. In talking the night that Earl and I were up at Cleveland to watch a game up there that Pat and John and one of your old buddies, Bennett DeSalvatore, were working. You know, those guys were talking, you know, I figured NBA took care of all your travel arrangements, and I come to find out that you guys are kind of your own travel agents, be it you or your wives or whatever. And then to hear those guys talk about the amount of paperwork and, you know, stuff that you have to get to the league. Obviously, you never see an NBA ref or, you know, that's overweight or out of shape. You guys train a lot, take care of yourselves, things like that. One thing I know a lot of our listeners are going to want to know, over the years, talk about some of the most memorable games that you've called, you know, NBA and or NCAA, things of that nature that really stick out in your mind as far as, you know, the Michael Jordans, the personalities that you've worked with over the years.
Well, that's a good question. You know, most of it is really all of your first. My first NBA game. My first NBA preseason game. I'll back up. My first NBA game. My first playoff game. My first playoff game was in Charlotte in April 1995, and it was the year that Michael Jordan had just come back in the middle of the year.
Mm-hmm.
And Chicago was playing Charlotte, and Michael just happened to have 48 points that night. And the game went into overtime. So you remember those kind of things. Then you remember your first conference finals game, and you remember your first, of course, finals game And then as far as collegiate officiating is concerned, the opportunity to work the Final Four is always something. It's pretty special that you're honored to be involved with, and hopefully that you get the job done to the expectations of what everybody is hoping for.
You know, as we, a lot of people that listen to this show, Joe, obviously are fans of high school basketball too. And well, I guess maybe a twofold question here. We've got, I've talked to some officials at the high school level that are concerned about a lot of the guys that have had a lot of experience, been doing this for years, you know, or have gotten older or for whatever reason just decided to get out. And according to them, there's not a lot of young ones coming in. And there's a lot of concern about what the quality of officiating is going to be in high school basketball down the road. So I guess two-part question. Do you see any fix to that? And the young ones that are coming in, what advice would you have for like a young official just starting out?
Well, I think, first of all, it's not just a problem in Ohio. It's a problem nationwide. And, you know, at some point in time, you would hope that the people in charge of all the different high school associations throughout the country would recognize there could be a problem and start doing more to recruit former players, former athletes of some type to be involved, to get involved in the schools and see if they can recruit and get into their classes to see if they would like to be a referee. But I could tell you this, knowing my own experience, the first day I refereed two fifth grade games and a girls JV game, and I made $13. But I knew right away, that was for all three total, I knew right away that I'd like to do it. And a referee will know right away if they like the challenge to referee basketball, if it doesn't bother them to have coaches and fans screaming at them, especially when you're refereeing fifth grade games.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
you'll know right away if you want to do it. And then from there, you see where they can go. But another thing that is happening throughout the country is some of the younger, talented referees are being identified at the small college level, and they're progressing quickly through the ranks. So they're pretty much skipping high school basketball. So that's also a problem, because those referees are being already identified, trained, and developed to be Division I referees maybe by the time they're in their mid to late 20s. And so that takes away from the quality referees that would be working high school games. So it is a problem. It has to be identified and has to be recognized and find a way to fix it.
To that point, and you mentioned in a lot of these young guys that are getting in, I, as you're saying this, I couldn't help but to think about your son, JB, who, what is he, 24, 25 now?
JB's 24.
Yeah.
He's doing pretty well.
Yeah, I'd say.
And, he started when he was 13, working CYO games in Akron, third grade games by himself. And when they started the program, they had the first year referees work third grade games by themselves. They always had somebody there to monitor the game.
Mm-hmm.
But that's where he got started, and hopefully some of what he's learned from me and many others has helped him to get where he is today. And he has a bright future. I just make sure I keep him grounded every day.
Well, and to that point, when JB was really little, and dad was always, you were always out on the road. I mean, you were in, you're out, you're gone. You know, you missed a lot of stuff with him in his youth. Did he want to, did he tell you right away, or did you kind of gear him towards getting into officiating, or just one day he said, "Dad, I want to get into this"? How did that happen?
Well, I think the way it happened was they started a program in Akron with their CYO program. They needed referees.
Mm-hmm.
So they went to high schools around the area to see if they had, people had anybody that wanted a referee. So I knew they started the program. And Nick Cream, who was a small college referee in Akron and high school referee, was in charge of that program.
Right.
So I just asked JB if he wanted to be involved. He was only in seventh grade. And he said yes, and they started, and that's what got him going. But he knew right away that he liked it. But the interesting thing from my point of view was I would watch him do things, and I would say, "Where did you learn that?" He said, "Well, I've been watching you referee since I was born, Dad. I got it from you."
Hmm.
And that was kind of interesting. I never realized he paid as much attention as he was paying.
that was interesting. Wow. So it's, you know, he did grow up with it, and I'm sure it's helping him.
Well,
but at the same time, he still has to keep getting better and work his way through the ranks.
Yeah, I know he's a young man. He old guy like me, I look at him as a kid, but he handles himself very well. I've watched him work, and then being around you guys last summer, he's a nice guy, and he's well grounded. He's not egotistical or arrogant or anything of that nature. He's very, very contrite and very humbled about what he does, and seems to have a good outlook on what he's doing and takes it seriously. Before we get you out of here, I know that your relationship with Earl kind of got started. What is the Coast to Coast, the programs that you guys work together, or I think you're actually, do you run that as far as a training program for up and coming officials and dealing with coaches, things like that? Talk a little bit about your relationship with Earl and what you do with the Coast to Coast program.
Sure. Well, Coast to Coast, I'll go to that first. I'm no longer involved, but that's a referee school. It's called Coast to Coast Referee School that Ron Gerritsen started back in the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
And he still runs it. I no longer do. And it's open to anybody. There are all NBA referees doing the teaching throughout the entire weekend or week. And it's there's probably at least a dozen NBA referees that at some point in time went to that school. And my relationship with Earl started when I was asked to be the supervisor of officials for the American Mideast Conference, which Rio Grande was part of.
Right.
And the real story is Earl sent me a videotape mad at one of the referees. So I watched the entire videotape and proceeded to let him know that the referee he was the most mad about had the best game. He missed the two plays Earl was mad about, but the other two guys maybe didn't do so well. And from that point on, Earl and I kind of hit it off pretty good. But I could tell you, the year he took his team, he went to the Final Four, correct?
Right. Yeah, I think 1990, something like that.
That year, it was a little bit later than that. Yeah. That year, I watched him play early. And my wife was with me, and we're driving back. And I told Patty, I said, I don't know if he can win 8 games this year. But he took that team and molded it into a Final Four team.
Uh-huh.
And that really shows you what kind of coach Earl Thomas was.
Yeah. He, as much as we like to give him grief, he's was a very good coach, but an even better communicator and a role model for kids. I mean, he's done some special things, and it's not just the play on the court, but the kids that they turned out when he was coached down at Rio Grande, they commonly have gone on and done very good things in life. Appreciate your time. I know you're busy. You got a game to work tonight. How many games are you averaging a week right now, this time of the season?
About four.
About four. And so you're not. Are you rolling into North Canton just about 1 or 2 days a week just to let Patty do the laundry and that's it?
Well, not really. This week, I work tonight. I work tomorrow. I work Saturday. Then I'm going to fly and meet her in Orlando for a few days. So
okay.
There's a game or two mixed in there, but that's how we kind of break it up.
Okay. Well, I do demand a grudge match with you and JB and Andy and the other guys. You took our money last summer up on the golf course, so we're going to have to work that out next as the weather breaks. Sometime I make it up towards Akron and we can get together. I know you're working the family business more in the summer than you are out on the road.
Well, thank you very much, Carl. I appreciate it. I look forward to that opportunity to make that long putt seal the deal for our
boys. Yeah, you had a bunch of young bucks hitting it off the tee. They hit it 300 yards, and then you nail a 15-footer to win the match. But anyhow, Joe, seriously, thanks. Appreciate you taking time out of your schedule. Wish you the best, and we'll stay in touch, okay?
All right, Carl. Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot, Joe.
All right.
Joe DeRosa, a referee that has been around the block quite a bit, Coach. He's always good to talk to and a very, very, very nice guy.
Yeah, I know you'd met him before, and I never have, but getting a chance to listen to him there was interesting. And obviously, I'm sure it's pretty hard to get everything in a short period of time with a guy like that. You could probably do an hour interview with a guy like that, just listen to stories. I mean, just listening to stories about, you know, games he's done or whatever. But, no, appreciate having him on. And it kind of caps off the little series we did there with some officials and some rules and things like that. It's nice to have a guy like that as the finale.
Yeah, I quickly, the way I got, you know, how I met him through Earl is actually Joe's son, JB, that we were just talking about. He was getting married this summer up in the Akron Canton area. They wanted to play golf at this place you and I play. So I got him on and we played, and it was Joe, his son, this Andy Frazzi, who's also an up-and-coming ref that works in the D-League, and then a bunch of NBA refs that were flying in for the weekend. Ron Gerritsen, Billy Kennedy, who was recently in the news, not for a basketball thing. Bill's a great guy. And Earl and several of us, we had a whole bunch of them play golf. And just to be around them for the entire day and hear the little side stories about, oh, you remember that one time where I threw out, you know, Phil Jackson when they ejected them, or this story, and you're like, "Wow, these guys!" But they are they're normal people, but they're very good at what they do, and they take it very seriously.
Yeah, no doubt.
Well, coming up next on the Viking Rumble Podcast, do have an upcoming game to talk about against Miami Trace. We'll preview that and talk about the season coming up as we try to recoup off a tough TVC Ohio loss as the Viking Rumble Podcast rolls on. Back on the Viking Rumble Podcast, presented by McDonald's. McDonald's and MacArthur, Jackson, Oak Hill, and Wellston. McDonald's and high school sports go hand in hand. Carl Knox, alongside Coach Matt Combs, the Viking Rumble Podcast. Episode 57, as we record this little ditty, January 27th, 2016. And the show must go on, Coach. Nice to chit-chat with NCAA Division I ref Joe DeRosa, also in the NBA for about 22 years. But that being said, we talked earlier in the podcast about a tough loss to Athens and a good road win way back when on the 19th against Meigs. But moving along, the show goes on. You still got to get back to work. And I know when you guys get in the gym after the hiccup or the tough loss against Athens, that's yesterday's news. Now you got to talk about Miami Trace and the Panthers coming to town this Saturday night. That will be what, January the 30th. Yeah, you're way ahead of me. A tough team out of the SCOL, and the Panthers always formidable. I know you got them last year. Oh, that was at our place, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Why are we playing them?
Well, we were supposed to go over there this year, and they had a conflict with a wrestling invitational on the same day. Big wrestling invitational. Since we couldn't really find another date to work out, and since we're going to play them a 2-year contract anyway, you know, you're going to play home and away regardless. So it's just a little bit out of order. But
so it's going to go 2 here, then next 2 years going to be.
Well, yeah. I mean, how would we do it? I mean, we played them a 2-year contract already. This will be the beginning of a new one. We'll play them at home, then play them away next year, decide if we're going to continue it or not. I mean, it's a good series. It's maybe a little bit of a travel, you know, it's not a terrible trip, I don't think. It's pretty much
highway. It's a lot of miles, not a bad drive.
So, it's a good game, competitive game. It's been competitive the last 2 years, and they've got an athletic group, a group that can get up and down the floor, and like I said, some really good athletes, a little bit of size.
Did they have – please tell me that all the Pettifords have graduated.
No, not all of them. Now, they still have a couple Pettifords in there. I know the one, his first name's escaping me, is a really dynamic guard for them, and really gets off the floor well. So they've got a nice team, a couple shooters and some nice athletes, and it's just a good balanced team. They've had some good wins this year, and I think they had a win against Logan Elm, and they've had a couple tough losses too to some good basketball teams, but they're going to be a real formidable opponent. They'll come in here. They're a very good team, and we're going to have to pick ourselves up off the mats and be ready.
Well, should be a good game, and as we said earlier, with the TVC standings now, the rest of the season is not just with the league, but also non-league. You still, I guess, really you're in the guts of the season. You got Miami Trace and Maysville, the last game of the season, the only non-league games. Other than that, the other 5 games are all TVC games, so we're kind of getting to that point in time in the season where it's crunch time. Tournament draw is coming up here in a few weeks, and away we go into the one and done season. So just like that, it goes fast. Now you got practice to get to. Probably going to have a little talk today.
Yeah,
little regroup session.
Yeah.
I don't want to delve too far into the team chemistry or what you're going to say, but I know you talked about it in the first segment, but just to reiterate, how do you deal with this?
That first practice after a loss sometimes is a tough one. When you're having a year like we're having, where you don't lose, we haven't lost a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also a crucial one because I think I always feel a little better after we get that first practice in under our belt, kind of air some things out, kind of work on some of the things that we didn't do well last night. But, you know, it's one of those deals where if I thought there were, like, major chemistry problems or something, it'd be something like that. That's not really the case with this team. I mean, in both our losses this year, there have been real clear-cut basketball reasons why we've lost.
Mm-hmm.
And when you give up 9 threes last night and
make two.
Yeah, and a lot of role players for Athens were hitting shots, and it's hard enough to guard Lutz or Saltzman or whoever, but then when other guys get involved too, it really makes them hard to guard. And like we talked about this earlier in the session, but I don't want to reiterate, but at the same time, you know, those are basketball things that hopefully can be fixed. And so to answer your question, we get into practice, we'll talk a little bit. Make sure our focus is where it needs to be, and then obviously work on the basketball things we got to get better at.
Well, part of life, we're all going to stub our toe. It's just a matter of how we deal with it, and that's a testament of a champion. Is any time you're handed adversity, you learn how to adjust and move on, and that's the lessons we teach these kids that years from now, when they're fat slobs like you and I, and they can't play the sport anymore, at least they can learn the character of rebounding and things like that. Well, Coach, I'll let you go. I know you got to get to practice. Good luck to you against Miami Trace, and we'll talk it all over again next week. For the Viking Realm Ball Podcast, this is Carl Knox alongside Matt Combs saying thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next time.
You've been listening to the McDonald's Viking Realm Ball Podcast, presented by McDonald's of Jackson, Wellston, Oak Hill, and now proudly in MacArthur. McDonald's and Viking basketball. I'm loving it. Join us next week for an inside look at Vikings hoops with the head coach of the Vikings, Matt Combs, and your host, Carl Knox, right here on the McDonald's Viking Realm Ball Podcast.